I'll ask anybody's question but yours, if you're an idiot.
My wife can score more than 2 buckets on 11 shots because I know my wife will at least shot fake one time.
I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my...
What's up and welcome in. It is the Final Four preview here on Made for March. Tyler Aki, Tim Leonard. Check the show out on Twitter, at Made for March. That's at Made the number 4 March. And boy, what a glorious week we have. And Tim, I mean, you just look at the Elite Eight games. And listen, you and I, we love college basketball. Kind of a dud in the Elite Eight. And but let's be honest. Was it a dud? Yes. But I think you needed that dud to get to where we are now. We've got 4 blue blood programs. Although, let's start with this, because a lot of people have been, this has been a topic of conversation lately. Is Villanova a blue blood?
Yes, definitely.
Thank you. I'm with you.
They might be the most accomplished of the 4 recently. Not all time. Don't get my words twisted. I don't want people coming after me. But I do think Villanova has kind of been underrated, if anything, recently. Jay Wright has been underrated, if anything, recently, because they're back in the Final Four, and it's just sort of not even a storyline. They're not being talked about nearly as much as the other 3 teams in the tournament, I feel like.
Here's why. They check a lot of boxes for me to become a blue blood. A, they've got the championships to back it up. And for those saying, oh, they've only got 3, well, Kansas only has 3. All right, Kansas is a like no doubt a blue blood, right?
Right.
So there, boom, the championships. All right, you've got history behind your program with Rolly Massimino going back to him, and now you've got Jay Wright doing some great things with Villanova. You won one of the most epic championship games of all time, 2 of the most epic championship games of all time. When you look back to when they took down Georgetown and shot like 80% in the second half of that game, and then you've got the Chris Jenkins shot. You have history within your program. I think that's important, and it's history that spans over the course of decades, so give me Villanova there. And that, to me, is kind of – and you play in a big-time conference as well, a historic conference. So, yes, Villanova's a blue blood. I don't think there's much to debate about it here.
I think the fact that no one is really that surprised at this point that a Villanova team that has dealt with injuries and is not that talented is back to where they are is pretty mind-boggling and speaks to the fact that they have really risen to a new tier of college basketball. Because I remember when Jay Wright was known as a choke artist in March when they lost to NC State.
People thought he was a fraud.
And there's that funny video of the poor girl who's in the Villanova band crying, and you see the NC State score flash up. That was when Nova, I believe, was a 1 seed that year. They lost once to UConn early when UConn went on their Kemba run, I think, or maybe it was the Kevin Ollie UConn 2014 run. But either way, there were several years where Jay Wright was not beloved by the Villanova fan base and was considered a coach that couldn't get it done in March, and now here we are. So it's sort of funny because that happened to Billy Donovan, then they won back-to-back. That happened to Tony Bennett, then he won a title. That's maybe going to happen to Mark Few, although it feels like Gonzaga kind of maybe missed their window. I don't know if that's something we want to talk about.
Yeah. So we will get to all the odds as well today from BovadaSportsbook.com. Just looking at the futures market, I think they've got some player of the year or national or most outstanding player of the tournament. I always find that fascinating because that's where you can find some value too, because you get down to these final 4 teams and nobody with shorter odds than 5-1, and you've got 2 teams that could potentially meet up in the championship all under 2-1 as well. So you're not going to get a ton of value there, but most outstanding player of the tournament is always a fascinating one to me. We'll dive into all of that. Let's start, though, with the marquee matchup, the one that everybody is all in on. And it feels like destiny at this point, but North Carolina hosting Coach K, I guess I shouldn't say hosting, playing Coach K and Duke in New Orleans. I mean, you could not have drawn this up any better for Coach K's farewell tour. You really couldn't. And now you've got 2 of the biggest programs in the history of the sport duking it out on a national title stage to potentially get Coach K into the championship game to know that that game is going to be his last game? Or on the other hand, you've got a Carolina team with a chance to play spoiler. You can't draw this stuff up. You can't map this stuff out. It's Disney-level stuff.
Look, I am very close to this game. I'm very close to this situation. Growing up in the greater Triangle area where it feels like everyone cared about UNC and Duke and you had to pick a side, and that was the biggest thing ever because there's no pro sports in the Raleigh area, and Durham and Chapel Hill are right next to each other, and there's all this history of the rivalry. I understand that I probably value this game more than most, but at the same time, how is this not one of the biggest college basketball games ever? Because
it is.
It's got to be. And I think if UNC were to get this win, and of course I'm looking at it from that perspective because that's where my allegiance is, and we've talked about how it's been keeping me up at night. Cold sweats, dreams throughout March, just the thought of Coach K running the table. And it's becoming real and more real, and now here he has to go up against UNC, and it's frankly terrifying. But it does feel like that Coach K in his final game, just UNC against Duke in the Final Four for the first time ever in a tournament, would already be one of the biggest games. But if UNC were to win this game, I think it might be the single best win in program history, which is saying a lot.
It would be bigger than the championship.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think it's bigger than a national title. Like, if they, as an 8 seed, ruin Coach K's farewell tour for the second time in a little over a month, and they do it on the biggest stage in the sport, I don't really care if they win it all at that point. I mean, sure, I'll be rooting for him, but that is the national championship. This game means more than just another national title that they've won, which seems silly and seems wrong, but I do think this would be the biggest win in program history if the Tar Heels get it.
So, you know, it's funny you bring that up because we've kind of talked about this a little bit in text threads and stuff like that. But if, let's say North Carolina wins this game, would Hubert Davis would have two of the X number of the biggest wins in Carolina history? Like, how deep is the list? Is it three? Is it five? Is it seven? Is it 10? Like, for a guy that people wanted to fire in his first season after that loss at home against Pitt, to now having two of what? You give me the number as the Carolina fan, because obviously there's big championship games littered throughout the history, but Hubert Davis would have two of the blank biggest wins in program history.
Probably top 10. The fascinating thing, though, is...
You really think... Okay, so you only think it's 10, because I think it's more like 5, but you're obviously a lot closer than I am to
maybe
it.
Maybe 5. I mean, it's tough. I think the fascinating thing is if they win this game, then the Cameron game is weirdly not remembered as much because it's this
right.
is the time
this is just
that we
that
ruined
on steroids, yeah.
Yeah, ruined Coach K. So, but then also, if Duke wins this game, I don't think the Cameron win holds as much value. It's still a funny thing.
I don't know.
Carolina,
I think it's still, we live in meme culture, and that's an all-time meme game.
It is, like, yeah. But also, like, then Duke would just have the obvious retort if you're a Duke fan of saying, yeah, but we got you when it really mattered and we took 2 of 3 and that wasn't actually Coach K's final time against UNC. So I don't know. I mean, this is what's fascinating, Tyler, is knowing a lot of Duke fans, knowing a lot of UNC fans. Well, I'll ask you, what do you think, which fan base do you think is more on edge going into this game?
Oh, it's Duke. It has to be Duke.
I mean, that's Carolina, what I would have thought, but every Duke fan I know is just not even worried about it. And it makes me upset.
Like, Duke fans, I don't know if Duke fans care. Like,
that's the thing. I think UNC fans care more. Yeah.
They're not a good college basketball fan base. I'll tell you that right now. They are the most overrated college basketball fan base out there.
I mean, the Cameron crazies are pretty crazy. Like, I don't know if I go
that far. Are
they
crazy? Yeah, but you're filling a gym for 9,000 people. It's easy to fill that gym when you're, A, the biggest show in town, and B, have the brand that you have.
Yeah, but you're camping out all year for the big games and Kishet. I think it's a very cool fan base.
Did you see, I forget who, it may have been like the, what's the big newspaper in Raleigh? Is it like the Raleigh News and Observer?
Yeah.
Or something like that?
Yep.
Like, I guess like a couple years ago, somebody wrote a piece about, are the Cameron crazy? Crazies getting less crazy? Like, are they losing their craziness? They like did some advanced stuff with it. I thought it was pretty funny. But so looking at the number here on Bovada for this game, Duke is a 4-point favorite here. Minus 185 on the money line. Total set at 151.5 for the game. I think that this goes one of two. I don't think this is a Carolina covers within the number sort of game. I think Carolina wins outright, or Duke ends up winning by 7 to 10 points in that name, or maybe even blows them out too. It's just, you know, with Carolina in the first 5 minutes of the game, who's going to win the basketball game. You can tell Carolina's either going to be competitive and start rolling through a team, or they're going to be on their heels and never really in the basketball game. Because if this team gets down, they're not coming back.
Right. I mean, X's and O's wise, I think it's very critical that Armando Bacot stays out of foul trouble, because you have Mark Williams on the other side, and UNC just frankly doesn't really have any other options. They're very limited in terms of their depth compared to Duke. Duke has more talent. Duke's a better basketball team. I just find it fascinating that every Duke fan I know is kind of like, yeah, this is going to be a cool game and we're going to win, and then Coach K is going to win the title, and that's how it's ending. Like, they aren't even entertaining the idea of UNC beating them, whereas me and I think the collective UNC fans are viewing this as, oh, like, I can't stand Coach K winning already, and this would make it even worse if he beats Duke in this game. But from an outsider's perspective, like you were saying, Duke has everything to lose here. It's very similar to the Cameron game at the end of the regular season, where Duke is the team that is expected to win. If Duke loses, it's an embarrassment to Duke. And UNC is kind of not even supposed to be here. And if they win this game, it'd just be another thing that they'd have over the Coach K retirement tour that would make kind of the whole thing seem like a joke. So it's odd that all these Duke fans are just so convinced that they have the better team, which they do. And I do feel like Duke will probably win the game, but also I'm just too close to it to even really have a rational opinion on the matter.
So I look at it from the player standpoint as, like, I think Duke has sort of looked past the looming cloud of every single game of this could be Coach K's last. I think they're past that now. I think that Carolina game in Cameron did a lot. Like, that, it looked like a bad loss, but I think in terms of the overall health of this team and these young kids on this team, probably for the best that they lost that game, so they could sort of feel the embarrassment and, like, all right, kind of got that, flush that out of the system now. But I think when you get to the Final Four, like, I think they're obviously the team with way more to lose here. You're a 2 seed going up against an 8 seed, and again, once you get to the Final Four, you can kind of throw seeding out, because to get to the Final Four is no easy task, and if you do get there, you've probably outshot what your seed is. You should be a 1 seed all in the way that you kind of lay everything out. But I look at it too, in this game, there's two little factors for me that I'm looking at. A, what Caleb Love are we getting? Because if Caleb Love plays the way that Caleb Love can play, he's going to be the best guard on the floor in this game. I mean, yeah, you've got some good pieces on the other side. Jeremy Roach has had his moments throughout the tournament. Trevor Keels is a really fine player as well. Wendell Moore is a great player too. AJ Griffin's giving you some stuff. But none of them get to the level that Caleb Love can get to, like when he unlocked himself in that second half against UCLA. If that's the Caleb Love we get in this game, UNC is going to win the basketball game. There's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah, he is the king of the no-no yes shot. Really, yeah. I don't know if anyone can touch him in terms of how much I've said that over the course of watching the season. He was tremendous in the second half of the last game, for sure. I do find it fascinating just the huge disparity there is in talent between the two rosters. You wouldn't have guessed it, but I saw something.
Just go
in the
NBA draft-wise here. Look top to bottom NBA draft.
That's what I was going to say is, I saw something in The Athletic. All right, who are the NBA draft prospects? And they listed 5 Duke players who everyone probably knows by now, so I don't have to list them out, but they're all first-round potential. Banchero's top 3, maybe top 5. Griffin's probably top 10. And then they put, at the end, a UNC player, Caleb Love, potential second-round pick. Like, that's all UNC has from an NBA perspective on their roster. So, and really, the rest of the Final Four is kind of that way. It feels like Duke is head and shoulders more talented. They're the outlier. They're the team that is a little younger, has made mistakes throughout the year, but is definitely playing great basketball and the most talented and has the highest ceiling. And when they're playing the best, they're probably the best team. I'm just going to be fascinated to see How does the game go? How does it start? Because you would think that adrenaline is at an all-time high for both of these squads. Like, if you're Brady Manek, how do you not jack your first three into the first row or just bang it off the backboard? You know, because, I mean, there's so much pressure already from playing in New Orleans and playing on that stage and in front of all those people. But you add in the Coach K dynamic, and maybe the players are just going to get into a mode and it's going to be a fun, fast-paced, high-scoring game. But I find it hard to believe that both teams are just going to come out clicking, considering the gravity and the pressure of the moment.
Not to mention, Tim, don't forget about those sight lines, too.
Exactly. Do not forget that always about those happens sight lines in these games. Yeah.
And listen, with a Duke team that's already not a great three-point shooting team, and now you have to combat the sight lines of everything. Like, sure, there's a couple guys who are good three-point shooters on Duke, but there's a couple guys who you don't have to guard. Like, Paolo Banchero is probably not going to hurt you from deep. Trevor Keels isn't going to hurt you from deep. Jeremy Roach
Banchero can make it, though. I mean, we say this.
He's shooting 33% on the season.
Yeah.
So it's not a spectacular thing. And, I mean, you just look at some of these Duke games, like the Arkansas Elite Eight game. They had the graphic up on CBS for the longest time, and I don't think Duke scored a bucket outside of the paint for like the first 14 minutes. And I remember hearing Jim Nance say that. I'm like, what, really? Like 14 minutes and they haven't gotten anything outside of the paint or a free throw? I found that extremely shocking. But if you can lock up in the interior, which I think Carolina can do, I think if you're Duke, this is not the team you wanted to face out of that East region. Like, and I'm talking about, I would have rather seen, if I'm Duke, I would have rather seen Baylor. I think I would have rather seen Kentucky. I would have rather seen Purdue. I would not want to see a team for the third time in Carolina and a team that has the ability to hit your curveball. And what that curveball is that 2-3 zone that they've gone to, because not only has Carolina gone up against it with Duke, but they've gone up against it with Syracuse too. And over the years, they have dominated Syracuse and dominated that 2-3 zone. And that's something that I would be really afraid of if I'm Duke, because that's one thing that's kind of a big reason why you're here right now. And the way that they've implemented that in second halves to throw off the opposing offenses, and you're not going to be able to do that against Carolina.
Well, you talked about earlier how we'll know in the first 5 minutes probably whether UNC is going to be in this game or not. I'm frankly terrified that the game ends and it's almost like that Duke game up at Syracuse where Duke gets up 30-9, or the first time that Duke went to Chapel Hill. There's been several games this year where UNC has gotten punched and gotten beaten down early, and it hasn't happened in a while. I'll give them credit for that. And there's also been games this year where Duke, that Syracuse game, sightlines, dome environment, and they just came out and made every single three they looked at. And that scares me. I think it's possible that this team just rises to the occasion, and it's not like UNC is a great defensive team. They can hunt Brady Manek in ball screens. They can hunt Armando Bacot in that drop coverage ball, and Roach has been playing better. So I'm with you. I think Duke probably has the edge here, and I'm so close to it and so on edge about the whole situation that I don't really know how this game plays out, because it's such an unprecedented game in terms of levels of pressure going in my opinion.
And the fact that it's never happened before, which I could not believe, they've never faced off in the NCAA tournament until now. I will say one thing about this matchup. I'm not touching the initial spread of 4.5, but I'm going to live bet the ever-living shit out of this game on Bovada. Because, like, that's the way you play UNC. You play them through live betting. I think that's the only way to do it with this team.
Yeah. It is amazing. They have a ton of parallels to my Boston Celtics. Those have been the two teams that I've been following throughout the year, where just thinking back now that Hubert Davis, new coach, Ime Udoka, the Celtics coach, was a new coach, back in December, back in November, I mean, they were on the hot seat. They were getting ridiculed left and right, and their new philosophies were not working, and everyone was panicking, and it was a dumpster fire for both of these teams. I think UNC, if we want to stick on them, like, the Pittsburgh game wasn't that long ago, and after it ended, I kind of just told myself, you know what, it's not our year, and I'm pretty much done watching this team. Like, not actually, but that was my mindset after seeing them totally lay an egg against a really bad Pittsburgh team at home in a game they needed to win and they knew they needed to win, and it looked like they played with no urgency for what felt like the sixth or seventh time this year. So it's amazing that not only just the fact that Hubert Davis has made the Final Four in his first year, and that's the first coach to do it since Guthridge, who was the head coach at UNC, taking over for Dean Smith, which is kind of funny. That was 1998, 1997, I think. But the fact that he did it after all the negative energy, after all the backlash and all the terrible losses UNC had in the early part of the season to make it to this point, it feels like this is probably where the luck runs out. I just can't really see UNC playing for a title game. And the other thing is, I think this is not really being talked about a whole lot, but maybe it will after the game. Whoever wins this game then has to turn around and play an even bigger game, hypothetically, a couple days and on Monday night at the same place. But I think it's going to be very tough emotionally for Duke to stay engaged. It's almost like the Jalen Suggs shot of last year for Gonzaga, maybe. It's right. Just sort of, it's odd to me that someone is going to be playing in the title game after this, because it feels like this is such a monumental game that deserves like a week of decompressing if you could have it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I do think it does have the vibes of, like you may win silver, but you won gold in your mind if you win this game when it's all said and done. Because I do think the winner of the NCAA tournament is coming from the right side of the bracket. I do think it's going to be either Kansas or Villanova that ultimately cuts it down, just because I think it's going to be too much for these two teams to go out there, play this game, and then go out there and have to play another game on a short turnaround 2 days later. I do think it's a lot. On the note of one last note on Carolina here, when we bring up the Pitt loss, they've lost one game since then. So that took place on February 16th, all right? So we've got about a month and a half worth of sample since then. And since then, they've lost one game. It was in the ACC tournament to Virginia Tech. But all their wins during that span, and that is 10 games, have all been by 7 or more points. Which is, like, they kill teams. And two of those games went to overtime, too, which is the crazy thing. But like, even you look at, like, that Baylor game. Did they win by 7 points and did it go to overtime? Yes. But UNC controlled that game from the get-go. And if Brady Manek doesn't get tossed, they probably win that game by 15 points at least.
Right. They were up 25. So, yeah, so.
Right, yeah.
The
so,
point holds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I don't know. I'm super excited for this game. And you know what? You know what's going to make my day? You know what's going to make my year, probably? It would be if we got a Carolina versus Kansas final and to see the grin on Roy Williams as the Roy Williams Bowl caps off the Coach K retirement tour. Like, what a story that would be. Isn't that the way that the man who holds a true retirement tour for himself, has done it honorably, didn't take anything away from the kids, retired on his own accord without making it the story about him.
No ego.
We're actually a year ago to the day, because it is April Fool's Day here, and we all thought it was a joke a year ago when Roy announced his retirement, and here we are a year later. He's done it the right way. He's gone out and seen his buddies along the college basketball trail. He's going to all these different games, and he could be there in New Orleans seeing his two former programs go head-to-head for a national championship. That, to me, that is a retirement tour well-deserved, and wouldn't that be the perfect exclamation point on the year of the retirement tour?
Gosh, I hope it happens. I just don't even know what to think about this game anymore, because part of me feels like it'd be too poetic if Duke wins, and then part of me thinks it just doesn't ever end with the UNC victory. Like, if UNC wins this game, it might be one of the greatest moments of my sporting life. I mean, just because
you're gonna
I
feel
been,
how I felt when the Cubs finally won the World Series.
Much.
That's gonna be you.
Like, and it's odd to say because it probably doesn't feel that big to an outsider, but I've been rooting against Duke more than anything in this entire tournament. When Michigan State had a chance, I was pretty much wearing Sparty green and jumping up and down on every shot, because it's more that the satisfaction of Coach K leaving the court one last time and UNC players jumping up and down around it. I just don't think it happens. It doesn't feel like we deserve to do it again after doing it in Cameron, and Duke's just a better team, I think, sadly.
I love this ploy. I love this ploy for you. You're doing
it
the right way
here. What am I supposed to think? I mean, it's impossible.
I know. Exactly. And that's why it's possible. It's because you're counting yourself out. And that's exactly how these things go down. And then you're going to come hop back on the show a week from today on Tuesday or whenever we record next, and you're gonna be the happiest man in the world. You're gonna be the happiest man in the world because Carolina, like, this is the championship for Carolina.
Yeah,
no doubt about it. So, all right, let's move on to the other game here. We've got Villanova and we've got Kansas. This sucks, man. This sucks to not have Justin Moore for a game like this. Otherwise, you're looking at an unbelievable matchup. But if there's any team of any of these four teams left standing, hell, any of the 68, I'll take that back. There's 67 teams, or what was it, 66 other teams in this tournament that could not overcome what Villanova is about to endure. It's Houston, but I think Villanova is the other team. There are two teams that could do this, and it's those two.
The culture,
and it feels like everyone's counting Villanova out here in a situation like this, and I don't think you want to count Villanova out ever.
It is weird. I think I saw in Bovada that the odds are better for UNC to win the national title than Villanova, which does not make sense to me. But interesting dilemma for me on this game is the age-old question of how do I hedge, because I have Kansas winning my bracket pool. I had this matchup on the right side of my bracket, Kansas-Villanova. I have Kansas winning, and if Kansas wins, I win my pool, which I think I put down like $25, and that would net me $600 or so if they win. But if they lose in this game, I'm probably not going to make any money back. I mean, I might finish in third, which might get me my bracket pool money back, but it's also, it's kind of a good situation because Villanova now is 4.5-point dogs on Bovada thanks to the Justin Moore news, which is really unfortunate. I also think Colin Gillespie's been playing hurt a little bit too, and that's something that's been sort of under the radar. He got tripped up, I believe, in the Sweet 16 matchup against Michigan. He has not looked like himself since. Now, I still think he'll make plays and he'll do Colin Gillespie things in this game, but it's worth noting that while everyone probably has an injury or two, Kansas, again, is running up against a team after getting Creighton down two starters, after then drawing Providence, who is not even in the top 40 on KenPom when they played them, and then getting a Miami team that's an 11 seed. Kansas continues to get kind of the luck of the draw here, and it's fascinating because Bill Self does not have his most talented team. I would say definitely it's not as talented as the 2020 COVID team when you had Udoka in that team, and Dotson, I think, in 2020. Mm-hmm, so, they had that pairing, and they were number one before the tournament. That never happened. But, look, like, this just might be their year because the draw is sort of setting up for them, and that's more important than anything, usually.
Right, and it kind of feels like Houston. I mean, it's even the same region of the bracket. Now, it's not quite nearly the luck that Houston got along the way, where they never had to face a double-digit seed until the Final Four. But here, let me lay out your hedging situation right here.
Right.
All right. So if you hop on Bovada, you got Villanova as the 4.5-point dog. You just play Nova with the points, and
yeah,
you create
that's what
yourself
I'm thinking,
a little
because
you create
I
yourself
could
a 4.5-point middle. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think that could happen. I could see Nova covering, Kansas winning. So, my logic is probably just going to be to hit the points and not touch the money line. The other annoying thing about this is if UNC wins, then obviously I might just buy out at that point because I'm still rooting for UNC and Kansas. If UNC and Kansas meet, I would have money influence on Kansas. But at that point, I might just say, you know what, I'm taking my money and splitting it down the middle and I'm just going to be a fan of UNC for this game, of course, and not worry. Or maybe I just ride it and say it's a win-win, and obviously I'll still pull for my team more than a little extra cash. But it would really just make me want to go on a two-week sabbatical if Duke beats UNC and then Duke beats Kansas, and not only do they win the national title in Coach K's retirement tour and I have to deal with all of that, it is beating UNC, my team, and then beating Kansas, my money team, for my bracket. That would actually make me just have to probably take 3 weeks off of life and maybe just lay in bed for a while. I don't know what I would do if that happened. And I'm terrified because I think that has a decent shot of happening.
Well, we will send you gifts and flower baskets and all that stuff. But, okay, let's look at this matchup, though, with Villanova and with Kansas. I mean, you talk about two teams, especially in the case of Villanova, that have just sort of picked it up. And it feels like maybe each of these teams were sort of counted out when you look at what the rest of their bracket sort of shaped up like when you look in Kansas, in their region in the Midwest, people loved Iowa as the trendy pick to get there, as the team that was hot. You look at even like an Auburn, they had the best NBA prospect in the region. You look at a team like Wisconsin, Johnny Davis is a contender for National Player of the Year. And meanwhile, it's the one seed in Kansas that didn't feel like the underdog, but was the forgotten dog out there right in the fight. And then on the other side with Villanova, Arizona was this all-world beater team. Tennessee came in super hot heading into the final.
Everyone loved the NCAA tournament.
Everyone loved Tennessee. Hand up. I'm right there with them. Here they are. They've just done things, the little things, the right way along this journey. They've never really wavered. They've never backed down from any sort of challenge and have just gone out there and put together just – they have found a different way to win in every single game. They've found a way to win in every single game. Like the Houston game, supremely physical. Ohio State, it was run and gun up against them. And I think you're kind of seeing the same thing on the other side with Kansas, where they've just had to find different ways to win. And I think there's going to be a long feeling out process between these two teams in this game. I think you may see a very, very low scoring game in the first 10, 15 minutes of this one, just because these are going to be two teams that are trying to discover who the other team is a little bit. And that process might be prolonged. And I wouldn't be surprised, because they're two teams that it feels like sort of take in data for the first half. They take in data and then like, all right, here's how we're going to make our adjustments and exploit you in the second half. And when you've got two teams that are just sort of data collecting through the first 20 minutes, it can be a slow, might be a little boring of a game too, but I think the second half's going to be an unbelievable basketball game.
It is interesting because it's two very contrasting styles. Kansas wants to run. They want to get up and down. They want to force turnovers like they did in the second half of Miami. That's where they really built their lead, is because they forced turnovers, got out, and all of a sudden it was like, oh, a 12-0 run, 14-0 run, whatever it was. Villanova wants to be very slow and very physical. It's very similar, actually, to Gonzaga Baylor in the national title last year in that sense, because Nova is very, very physical. They basically have like five
just
linebackers.
Look at that Houston game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, how many times did you see Houston go up for an offensive rebound, secure it, and then it was ripped away at the last second? Or what Houston loves to do, tap the ball out and try to get it out to their guards on an offensive board. And how many times did you see Villanova win that 50-50 ball?
Yeah.
That's where that game turned.
A couple things that are going to be interesting. One for me is Colin Gillespie, who guards him, because he's so good at backing down guards and making the right play and just kind of, they do that clear out play where mm-hmm. Gillespie will get into a back down motion and just post up a smaller guard. Remy Martin, Dejon Harris are kind of the type of guards that Gillespie picks on in that role. So do you throw a Christian Brown on Gillespie? But the tough part about that, and this, there was a good Athletic article about this, breaking it down from like a coach's perspective, and a couple coaches that anonymously had gone up against Villanova this year. One of the coaches said something like, when you're tasked with guarding Gillespie, your legs are just dead on the other end. And we saw that with Sheed, the Houston guard, just couldn't really make a three in that game because he was running around and he was having to get up in Gillespie's face half court. And that was his big responsibility in the game. So very curious to see who Bill Self puts on Gillespie, because they kind of need Brown's offense, but I don't think Remy Martin or Harris or whatever point guard is out there at that given time is really well equipped to hang with the physical nature of Gillespie. I'm usually more inclined when it is slow physical versus fast finesse. I ride with slow physical typically, and I think that Baylor game was an example where usually it's easier to dictate tempo when you play a slow tempo. However, they need to take care of the basketball to do that, and the fact that they don't have more really limits Villanova from an offensive perspective and defensively as well, because now Eric Dixon has to be out there on pretty much every possession. They don't play a lot of guys. They don't have many options. He's going to have to switch on everything. And I think Kansas with Agbaji and some of their guards can take advantage of Dixon and pick and roll and switching matchups.
Yeah, I do think the one thing that sort of helps out Villanova in this matchup is there isn't some imposing big on the other end. Like David McCormick, I don't think is a guy that scares a lot of people.
He
on
could
scouting
though.
Reports.
He's when he plays he good, could. They're a different team. Yeah,
but I think the way that Dixon battled against those Houston bigs showed a lot too. I thought he was really, really good in that game and helping Kansas or helping Villanova get that physical win. But no, you're right. There could be some sort of pick and roll action that sort of throws things off. And listen, Justin Moore had a lot of versatility for you. But Villanova is going to have to do the little things right. Every single little thing is going to have to go right for Villanova in this game. And I mean, one of those little things that went right for them against Houston was the free throw shooting. I mean, this is a Villanova team that is on pace to break the all-time free throw shooting percentage record as a team in a single season. That's how good they are. And you want to know something too? Like Justin Moore was part of the quote-unquote free throw problem. Again, he wasn't bad. He was a 75% right. shooter, but he's the worst free throw shooter on this team. And now you're omitting him from this lineup. And he did make all of his free throws in that win against Houston, but you're taking the worst free throw shooter out of the equation here. Meanwhile, on the other side, Kansas is a team that has struggled. And I think they missed a lot of inconsequential free throws throughout the season. And who knows when that can come back to bite them. It could be in a game like this against Villanova, whose discipline and culture is on a whole nother level of anyone else remaining in this tournament.
Yeah, I know Villanova crushed him last time in the Final Four in 2018, and there's some reason to believe now that Kansas might just blow out Nova, but I don't think Nova, given their culture and how they just do all the little things, and they get the timely boards, and Gillespie makes the timely shots, and they've won big games, and they have guys that have been in these big moments that won't be scared. I don't really see them getting blown out. I frankly think Villanova has a very good shot of winning this game because of the tempo battle that I talked about. I know Justin Moore is a tough loss, but Kansas has been pretty lucky to this point. It's not like they've had to go up against a team that is nearly as good as Villanova. Agbaji hasn't even been playing well, and they've still been fine. So that's going to be a key. I also think Remy Martin, his emergence here, was one of the reasons why I felt confident enough to pick Kansas. Mostly it was their path and the fact that I was looking for a contrarian play. But Remy, in the end of the Big 12 tournament, started to play like this. And he gives them a totally different dynamic when he is scoring like that. Honestly, he's a guy that I would target for most outstanding player in terms of Bovada odds. Because I feel like if Kansas wins at all, it might be largely because of him and maybe even less because of Agbaji. It's actually been more Martin that's been coming alive in the tournament.
So let's look at those odds right now. So on Bovada, we've got Paolo as the leader. He's plus 240 to take home most outstanding player. And again, I think this is where you find some value as opposed to maybe picking a outright champion. So following Paolo, you've got Agbaji at plus 450, Gillespie and Jermaine Samuels, the Villanova teammates, each at 8-1, Armando Bacot 10-1, Remy Martin 10-1 as well. And then you get into the group of 20-1s here. AJ Griffin, Brady Manick, Caleb Love, Jeremy Roach, and Mark Williams, 22-1 for Christian Brown, Wendell Moore 25-1, Caleb Daniels 50-1, along with Eric Dixon and Jalen Wilson, David McCormick 60-1, Trevor Keels at 100-1. I'll tell you this. I do have a ticket in on one of these players to win most outstanding player. I took Brady Manick
at wow.
20-1. At 20-1, though, like he's gonna. If UNC wins this thing, it's probably going to be because of Brady Manick, and he's had the performances throughout the tournament as well to validate him being the most outstanding player. They're not winning without Brady Manick playing well.
Yeah.
So I think there's supreme value. I'd take a flyer on that. But in terms of finding guys who you pick them and it may be better value than picking the champion, I think the easy one here is Gillespie at 8-1. Because if Villanova wins, it's going to be Gillespie. He is the face of the program.
The one name I'd throw in there.
Doesn't he feel like, though, like we talk about all the time with the Super Bowl MVP, like Gillespie is the quarterback, where the quarterback doesn't even have to be the best player out there. He just has to play quarterback. Like Gillespie just has to play. He doesn't have to be the best player out there and he can win it.
The one name I throw in there as a long shot is Caleb Daniels for Villanova. just because the guy has never seen a shot that he doesn't like. And when he gets hot, he can really become a microwave type scorer.
Little DiVincenzo vibes here.
You're right. So we've seen that. Spike Albrecht, I know they didn't win that game, but there's guys that would be in the conversation just based on, it's only two games that you're picking from, I believe, for most outstanding players. So look, if Daniels becomes the guy against Kansas and then he has 25 against Kansas and 14 against whoever in the national title, or maybe it's the reverse, I could see him being a guy that steps up in the big bright lights because he's just so used to, I mean, the guy just has a quick trigger and has a lot of confidence in himself, the way he carries himself and the way he plays. Anyway, so 50-1, I kind of like him as a long shot because I do think Villanova has a decent shot of winning it all here. I think they're getting slept on. I don't think Kansas is some otherworldly team. I know the Moore injury's tough, but usually we'll see guys rally around an injury like that. Michigan beating Colorado State in the first round was an example where they lost Devontae Jones, and they still were able to kind of piece together. And I don't think it's going to be a total deal breaker. I certainly think it should move the line a little bit, but I think Villanova has a better shot of UNC in terms of winning it all. So I would say they're a decent play to win it all odds-wise.
Last name that I would throw out value-wise, and it's kind of in the same vein of you picking Caleb Daniels here, but God forbid the Duke Blue Devils are the ones cutting down the nets. Can I interest you in an AJ Griffin at 20-1?
Yeah. What's Roach? I know you said it.
Roach is also 20-1.
Yeah. Roach has been playing well, too. I would agree. I think Griffin has a good shot.
He's that microwave player.
Duke's tough because it's almost like there's too many guys to choose from there. Villanova without Moore feels like you could maybe take a stab at a non-Gillespie and get some good value. Kansas, I think Remy Martin is the play. And I guess Agbaji...
Value-wise, yeah.
Yeah, I could see Agbaji taking advantage of those pin downs and curl moves and scoring a lot and just getting... But he's not really a creator, and Remy's the creator. And I think the way that Villanova plays defense, it's a lot of, all right, we got our switch, and now one-on-one, Remy Martin, can we break you down? Because Nova does not help. They just stress their one-on-one matchup. So I think Martin can take advantage of that against a guy like Eric Dixon.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us here on today's Made for March. We'll be back breaking down the national championship and the offseason ahead in college basketball. Can't wait to do that with all of you guys. So we will talk to you next week.
The game was over.